This is Spencer King, Editor-in-Chief of AXL. AXL is the American College of Cardiologists' extended learning series featuring conversations in cardiology with the scientists who conduct research in our field and the clinicians who are translating that research into clinical practice. You're about to hear an interview from our latest issue. As an AXL subscriber, you will receive 24 new interviews each month. Plus, depending on your subscription level, you will have access to hundreds of interviews in our digital library. With AXL, you can stream or download your content for convenient offline access to your mobile device. And each interview qualifies for CME credit and MOC self-assessment points. For more information, visit acc.org/AXL. Listen now to a talk I had with Mark Banaka, head of vascular research at the University of Colorado in Aurora. We discuss dapagliflozin and outcomes in patients with peripheral artery disease, insights from the DECLARE-TIMI 58 trial. Tell us a little bit, first of all, about the drug and what people should expect here.
The drug, this is an SGLT2 inhibitor, dapagliflozin. It's one of three that are commercially available right now. These drugs were designed to lower hemoglobin A1C in patients with diabetes, and they do so by inducing glucosuria. You spill out glucose in the urine, they have a mild diuretic effect. They cause some weight loss and lower your blood pressure. What's exciting about them is that over the last few years, there's been really an unexpected magnitude of benefit for major adverse cardiovascular events, heart failure, and renal events.
So this is a diabetes drug designed to waste sugar. And I understand you can get rid of 400 calories or so a day of sugar. So was this trial designed to figure out things about peripheral vascular disease, or how did this become interesting?
Yeah, so it was designed with a dedicated subgroup of symptomatic lower extremity peripheral artery disease. So that was planned. What wasn't planned was that while the trial was ongoing, there was data for another compound in the class, canagliflozin, where there's really this unexpected observation of about a twofold risk of amputation associated with canagliflozin. And so during the trial, we made sure to capture limb events, not only amputation, but limb ischemic events with a lot of granularity to adjudicate them in a prospective way so that we could understand what was going on.
But let me understand, it was a diabetes study primarily.
Yeah, it was about 17,000 patients, all with type 2 diabetes. About 7,000 of them also had established cardiovascular disease, MI, stroke, or PAD. Total of about 1,000 had lower extremity symptomatic PAD.
Let's concentrate on the peripheral vascular component of this. What did you find?
There were a few, sort of three key observations. If you start first in the placebo group, we learned a lot about the epidemiology of PAD and diabetes. These are frequently comorbid diseases. And patients with PAD versus those without in this trial had much higher rates of major adverse cardiovascular events, heart failure, and renal outcomes. And even after you adjust for differences, there's about a 50 to 60% excess. So PAD patients were sicker, they had higher event rates. And for limb outcomes, they had very high rates of limb ischemic events and amputation. I think one of the key observations is that although we associate lower extremity PAD with ischemic limb events like critical limb ischemia and acute limb ischemia, rates of limb infection and amputation due to infection were much higher than those ischemic risks. And so patients with PAD with diabetes are different than patients with PAD without diabetes. And we have to think a lot about amputation for infection in this population.
I see. Let's talk about the results.
First, we looked at efficacy, and the efficacy of dapagliflozin for the main outcomes, CV death and heart failure, and the renal composite outcome, they were the same whether or not you had diabetes. The relative risk reductions were the same, and there was no effect modification. But the patients with PAD were higher risk, and because they were higher risk, that relative risk reduction translated into an even greater absolute risk reduction in the PAD subgroup, so both for CV death and heart failure and for renal outcomes. Overall, we didn't see any imbalance in terms of limb ischemic events in any of the sort of bins that we had defined, acute limb ischemia, chronic critical limb ischemia, or amputation overall. And then we took a kind of a deep dive into PAD, and we saw that in other high-risk subgroups, and that we didn't see any consistent pattern of risk for amputation, although numerically there were more amputations with dapagliflozin than placebo in the PAD subgroup, didn't meet statistical significance.
Is there any explanation for that? Why would amputation be increased? It was significantly increased in your study, but was it increased in the other study?
Yeah, in Canada, it was increased. It's a great question. What I can tell you with some certainty now that we have these data is that any imbalance wouldn't be driven by really a macrovascular or conduit artery problem. It's not acute limb ischemia. It's not critical limb ischemia. It's not worsening claudication. That's not a driver or associated with this mechanism, at least with dapagliflozin. We're doing more work to look at the amputations and the other etiologies that contribute to them. And there was work done in other data sets and prospective trials. So I think that what we know now is that there's no ischemic risk with DAPA.
But you did identify with this a very high-risk group who have peripheral vascular disease. I think we knew that they were, but from your placebo group, you defined that even better. And then you find those cardiovascular events have been modified, and that's extremely exciting. So they're modified in this subset. The overall group for the patients that did not have these kind of high risk, what'd that look like? Because usually you pull out one group and you say you cherry pick that, and it looks like a fantastic result. Is the other one going the other way?
It's not going the other way. Relative risk reduction is the same in the other group, but the event rates are sort of higher in the PAD group. And I think one thing that is always hard when you look at all these subgroup analyses is that they're not mutually exclusive. So earlier today, there were presentations for prior myocardial infarction patients in the same trial where the event rates were very high, absolute risk reductions were greater. And then the heart failure data where there was significant reduction in CV mortality. And of course, of our PAD subgroup, many had prior MI and had heart failure. And so there's overlaps amongst these groups. And so I wouldn't say that the interpretation should be that for any of these subgroups, the absence of it says there's no benefit. But these are easy sort of clinical ways of determining groups that get greater benefit.
I love the results. I still am unclear why the drug reduces these events as much as it does. Is it just the improvement in the hemoglobin A1C that does this? Is there anything else going on?
There's clearly a diuretic effect, which would be sort of an explanation for some of the heart failure benefit, but not of this magnitude, obviously. I kind of think of them like ACE inhibitors. I mean, we have these big benefits in heart failure, mortality, and in MACE in some subsets, and there's probably some neural hormonal axis that this is altering in the kidney that has a broader benefit in terms of effect on the heart and other areas. I don't think it's all diuretic effect, but certainly losing fluid, losing sodium, losing body, blood pressure, and lowering blood pressure and losing body weight are good things. But there's probably something more to the story to explain the magnitude of benefit.
So lowering blood pressure, lowering blood sugar, losing a little bit of weight. This all sounds like lifestyle modification things that you might, if you did everything just perfectly, you might achieve outside of a drug. But this is very exciting that now we have things that drive us in that direction. This year and last year, new drugs are popping out right and left after a long period of not much. So I'm tremendously excited. And this therapy for diabetes, which now turns out to be very beneficial for a host of things, including heart failure, peripheral vascular complications of people with peripheral vascular disease, is right there up with the rest of these new drugs. Let me, in closing, ask you, what's the next investigation that needs to happen with this compound?
Well, there are ongoing trials that are exploring the benefit outside of diabetes because this drug was developed for diabetes. And is it a diabetes drug? Is it a cardiovascular drug? Do cardiologists prescribe it? Do endocrinologists? I think it's really exciting that there are dedicated trials of heart failure patients with this mechanism that don't have diabetes. And if those trials are positive and based on the heart failure data, the patients with reduced ejection fraction data presented today, I would certainly hope they would be. That's going to change it completely for this class of therapies. And then I think they'll be used like ACE inhibitors rather than like metformin and used very broadly because there aren't many therapies that reduce these outcomes as profoundly as these therapies. So that's exciting.
That is exciting. Thanks for visiting with us here on Axel.
Thank you.
This is Spencer King, Editor-in-Chief of Axel, and you've been listening to an interview from our recent issue. For more information on how to subscribe to Axel and receive additional interviews published each month, go to acc.org/Axel.